There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, listeners. Before we start this new episode, let me just mention my podcast sponsor, and that's iTalki. They are the perfect service if you're interested in improving your spoken fluency in English. And with iTalki, you can find qualified native speakers of English and arrange conversations or lessons whenever you want and wherever you want, because it's all done through Skype. They have thousands of teachers to choose from, and you can arrange classes around your schedule. The cool thing is that iTalki are offering you, my listeners, $10 worth of free English lessons. To get started, visit teacherluke.co.uk/talk, or just click an iTalki logo on my website. Okay, so that's the little sponsorship mention. Now let's start this episode, and here is the jingle.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is a journey into
the English language.
A journey into
the DNA of the English language.
Really?
The DNA of the English language. Now that's a really quite a strong claim.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Who are you?
You talking to me? You talking to me?
You know who I'm talking to.
I'm a school teacher. Teach English composition.
Oh, really?
Yes!
So then, hello. How are you doing? I hope you're well. I hope you're fine. Welcome back to another episode of this podcast for learners of English. In this episode, Ollie Richards, the polyglot from England, is back on the podcast. This is the second time that I've spoken to him on this podcast. The first time was back in February of this year. How do you say that month? Because the spelling is pretty weird. F-E-B-R-U-A-R-Y. But it's actually pronounced February. I think there's several ways to say this month, okay? February, or February. So February, four syllables, or February, three syllables. Okay, now that's a tricky word to say, and native speakers have some problems with that month as well. But either February or February. All right, so the first time I spoke to Ollie Richards on this podcast was in February, I believe, and that's episode number 332. If you haven't heard that one, I recommend that you go back into the archives, find it and listen to it, because it will give you some good context for this one. And also, it's just really useful for English learning, because it contains loads of really good advice and lots of motivation. Ollie is a great guest for this podcast because he basically spends his time learning languages and helping other people to learn languages too. Ollie has managed to learn lots of languages, including French, Spanish, Portuguese, Japanese, Arabic, and Cantonese. And he learned them all in adulthood, not as a child. And that's quite an achievement. And he's managed to do it using some pretty clever strategies, techniques, and routines, which we can all apply to our language learning too. Now, I've arranged to speak to Ollie over Skype in just a few minutes. So I'm just at the moment gearing myself up for the conversation, just getting all my Skype settings correct and getting everything connected and all that stuff. Last week, I saw Ollie briefly on Periscope talking about a recent work-related trip to Los Angeles. And he was talking about how the trip had affected his language learning routine. And it all sounded very interesting. So I sent him a message. I sent him an email basically saying this. I wrote, "Hi, Ollie. I saw you on Periscope the other day. Do you fancy coming on the podcast soon for a catch-up?" And he quickly replied by saying this. He wrote, "I'd love to come back on the podcast. I could do podcasts all day long, and especially yours, since it's so much fun." Okay, great. So that's that. It's all been set up. We haven't done much preparation for this episode beyond just setting a time for the conversation. The idea is that we're going to just catch up on his recent news, see where the conversation takes us, and ultimately share more conclusions and tips about language learning. Just one more thing before I talk to Ollie. Now, do you remember in our last conversation, in episode 332, Ollie asked me to make a commitment about my French learning. Do you remember? I promised that I would practice for 10 minutes every day. Also, I seem to remember a number of you made commitments about your learning in the comments section of that episode. And I wonder if you've kept up with those commitments. Well, honestly, okay, I'm putting my hands up. Honestly, I haven't been the greatest student because I haven't kept my promise. All right. Yeah, I know. It's not good enough. And really, to make progress in your language, in this case, I'm learning French. You have to make daily a commitment to daily practice. I know. Now, to be fair, I did go out and buy some self-study materials after this conversation with Ollie. I purposely went out to get some materials that I could use, and I chose them very carefully, and I started with the best of intentions, but I only did a few pages, and then I got out of the habit of doing it, which is a really common thing. It's like a big trap that we all fall into as language learners. We all kind of make these commitments and promises to ourselves, and then we do something big, like we buy something, like we'll buy some learning materials, and then we don't follow it up with the actual, you know, the legwork. So, yeah, I fell into that trap, and I feel a bit bad about it. And I wonder if he's going to bring it up. I think he probably will, but let's see. Now, my French has definitely improved recently, but the rate of improvement is just not good enough, frankly, and I need to pull my socks up and turn over a new leaf, and I think adding some daily practice into my routine would definitely help. Anyway, let's see if Ollie brings that up. But now, it's time to talk to Ollie Richards, the polyglot from England. So here we go.
Hello, we're talking about language.
Sit down, let's have a chat.
A bit of a chat, sir.
A bit of a chat, yes, Doctor, just a bit of a chat.
What about, sir?
About English as a global language.
This is a conversation.
Yes.
I would like to talk to you.
Okay, let's talk. Let's have a quick conversation, huh? What do you think?
That's what we're going to do.
Away, baby, let's go.
We're going to have a good time. We're going to have a
conversation
about language.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me back. It's always a pleasure to chat, and yeah, I'm doing well.
Great. I saw you on Periscope the other day.
Oh, no. You were the one.
Really? Yeah. No, there were a few people there. How is Periscope for you? Do you use it a lot?
Yeah, I have been. I mean, I'm kind of been off and on. I find it's quite exciting, Periscope. And for anyone who doesn't know what it is, it's like live video, so you can... You know, you can follow people live. So I basically turn on, I walk around London. This is what I do. I walk around London and I turn on the camera and I talk about, and people can watch live. And it's quite exciting to be able to have that kind of live, spontaneous conversation with people. I think it's a very new thing. And so people are still figuring out how it works. I'm still figuring out how I want to use it, but it's really cool to be able to just, you know, what happens, I'm walking along and I have an idea and I'm thinking about, you know, I was studying languages in the morning and I had this kind of crazy idea, or I had this realization that something is very important. So I just turn on Periscope and I talk about it, and it's quite cool.
Yeah, and also it saves whatever you've said. So you can kind of use it as a little record as well of those ideas as they come to you.
Yeah, yeah. It's different things, isn't it? Because obviously, you know, I write lots of blog posts, I do podcasts, but this is the thing that's really, you know, when you watch that, you get the real me. You know, there's no editing, there's no, you know, you see me like being a bit shy as a couple of people walk past.
Right.
Laughing at what I'm doing. Like, so yeah, you get the real thing, and that's cool. I think that's nice for people to see that, like, there are rough edges as well.
Yeah, definitely. I should do more of that. I mean, I had like a little phase of doing Periscopes last year, and I just sort of got out of it because I find that you know, I want to spend most of my time doing the podcast. And it's I try to kind of do both at the same time. And I don't think that's really the best way to use Periscope. Because when you're Periscoping, you really need to be speaking directly to the people on Periscope.
And if you're not,
if they're just sort of observing you doing something else, then it's less engaging. I think really
But I'll tell you what, I think it's quite exciting for English learners though. Because you can you know, if anyone hasn't used Periscope, what you can do is you've got this map of the world.
Yeah.
And you can go to anywhere in the world and you can look and see people. So like you can find the UK, you can go to London and you can see all the people that are talking live on video at that moment in London. You can just watch people talking, speaking English or whatever other language they're speaking.
Yeah.
And like that's a very cool tool to get real listening practice.
Absolutely, yeah. It's so authentic, you know, because a lot of the time it's just some guy sitting in his living room, you know, or a couple of friends who are playing like FIFA or something and they're Periscoping at the same time. You know, you can just drop into someone's house and just sort of observe them talking.
It's crazy. We should set everybody listening to this a challenge. Go and download the Periscope app right now. Find me and Luke. Yeah. And then you know, I guess if Luke isn't Periscoping, then that's going to be a bit of a letdown.
You're going to find me and there's just going to be nothing there.
There's going to be nothing there. But look for us anyway. And then just, you know, you're going to get this great live, spontaneous English listening practice. So go and get the app. It's really cool.
All right. So now in that Periscope that I saw you on, you were saying that you'd just come back from the USA.
Yes.
So can I ask you what you were doing in Los Angeles then? What were you doing there?
So I spent a week in the USA, and I actually was in LA for about 2 days or 1.5 days, and then I spent the rest of the time up in Boise, Idaho.
Oh, wow.
Which is the kind of place that no one has been to, but it's actually really nice.
Yeah.
It's kind of countryside, small town America, very white, homogenous place.
That's the Midwest, isn't it?
It's the Midwest. It's kind of Mormon country.
Yeah.
So Idaho and Utah, a lot of Mormons there. Very cool place. I really like it. And I was there on for work. I was meeting people that I work with, that I do business with.
Mm.
So it was kind of a business trip, really. But I did take the opportunity when I was in LA. I had a meetup, and I met some really, really cool people who listened to the podcast, to the I Will Teach You a Language podcast.
Yeah.
And we had, I put some photos on Facebook actually. And there was like, I think we had about 10 people just kind of turn up to this little cafe in Melrose Place in Los Angeles. And we spent the afternoon talking about languages and language learning and just life in general. And that was so cool to be able to just kind of drop in to a big city around the world and have all these people come out to meet me, basically. And it was a very, very nice experience.
I'd like to do the same thing. I mean, I was just talking on the podcast the other day about the idea of going on like the the Luke's English Podcast World Tour, which is just a crazy idea at the moment. But it I mean, you know, it's a crazy idea, but it might just work.
Well, you've got so many people listening to this podcast. I'm sure you could drop into like Tokyo and just pack out a concert venue. Or something.
Hello,
like.
Tokyo!
Yeah. I can see it happening.
Yeah. Thing is, though, I'd be like, hello, Tokyo! You know, and then I'd have to, you know, keep them entertained for an hour. That could be interesting. There's so many possibilities, actually. It's amazing. But yeah, a crazy project for the future there. Maybe I can learn from you and, you know, how you managed to hook up with those.
Well, I mean, listen, I thought when I went to LA, I thought no one's gonna be interested in meeting me. Why would anyone want to meet me? But I thought, you know, screw it. It's worth a try, right? It's not every day that I go to LA. So I did two things. I put an event on Facebook and I mentioned it on the podcast. And from those two things, people came. Half the people came from Facebook. Half the people came from just hearing me mention it on the podcast. I said, hey, oh, by the way, next Saturday, 22nd of May, I'm going to be in Los Angeles. So come and meet, and it worked. So, you know, I think for you, Luke, next time you go on holiday, whether it's like Brighton Pier or like a beach in Sri Lanka, just tell people, hey guys, I'm going to be in Brighton
Yeah.
Hanging out on the pier at 3:30 next Tuesday. Come along. You know, you might be surprised.
Yeah. All right. So how did the Americans that you met, certainly in Idaho, for example, how did they react to your Englishness? Because, you know, often Americans are quite charmed. They're quite charmed by things like the English accent. And did you have any conversations about British and American English?
What I do notice is, like, some friends of mine that spend a lot of time in the States, they do adopt Americanisms very, very quickly, because I think it's because they kind of want to, they get a bit tired of sticking out, you know, being clearly English. Yeah. And so they kind of go off saying things like, "Let's bounce, dude," and things like that. Mm. And just using American equivalent words.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting how quickly that happens. You see that with actors, like British actors or musicians who've relocated to, you know, Los Angeles, for example. You think of someone like Ringo Starr, you know, and they appear on TV in the UK with this Americanized accent. And you just know that there are people in their homes all over the country kind of going, "Oh, my God, listen to the way he speaks. He's gone all American."
Yeah.
What do you think about that? I mean, do you think they've got a point, or?
I think it's normal. I think if you spend that much time living in any country, you're going to get that accent. I mean, the reason, like my Spanish, the reason I speak Spanish with an accent from the Canary Islands, which is quite unusual, is simply because that's where my friends are from. I think it's inevitable, but I think it happens to everybody. I mean, my parents spent 4 years in Canada when they were younger, and they told me when they came back to the UK. All their friends would laugh at them because they'd lost their English accent. So accent, you know, is a funny thing. And in fact, like I've written blog posts about accent before, and it's a very funny thing because a lot of people want to have a perfect accent in English, and they want to speak like the Queen, or like BBC English, or whatever, or like me, or you, or whoever. They want, people feel that accent is a very important thing.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, we know in reality, because English is a lingua franca now, everybody uses it around the world. Mm. You have, I mean, the accent is a totally fluid thing, and you can have people from India, Syria, and Mexico talking together.
Yeah.
All of them have different accents, but they communicate without too much trouble. One of the things I always tell people is that accent, like, is not a question of speaking right or wrong, rightly or wrongly. Maybe I should, I don't know. Yeah. Accent is a function of your personality and your identity and your social group. Mm. So, you know, pronunciation is important, because pronunciation is, you know, do you say the sounds of English correctly?
Mm.
Can you say sa, ta, da, pa? That's pronunciation. But accent, it's not about speaking right or wrong. It's about speaking. It's about you demonstrating where you're from, where you live, and the people around you.
Yeah.
And as we've just seen, like, that can change very quickly. You can get English people who go to live in America and end up speaking half American very, very quickly. Although, curiously, it doesn't seem to work the other way around. I've never noticed many Americans that live in the UK very rarely seem to lose their accents.
I've heard a couple of Americans who've you know, lived in the UK for a while, sort of changing their accent slightly, or having their accent changed slightly. There's people like, I had a friend who was originally from the States, and he, just certain things, like, you know, the T sound sort of comes back a little bit, or it might be a glottal stop, or someone like Stuart Copeland, you know him? He was the drummer from The Police, right?
Yeah.
And he originally was American, but he moved to the UK and lived there for a long time. And you can hear in his accent, it's definitely American, but it's become anglicized to a certain extent. I mean,
for sure, yeah.
You know, so it does happen a bit, but yes, I guess it's less likely to happen. I wonder if that's just because American English is somehow, I don't know, more pervasive than British English, and therefore, you know, we accommodate to American English more easily than Americans accommodate to British English, you know, because we've already got a certain level of exposure to it from all the TV and movies and things like that. So it's quite an easy process to accommodate to American English, whereas it doesn't happen quite so easily the other way. Just a theory.
I wonder if it's also about identity, because I think accent is such a psychological thing, and it's, you know, the way that we the accent is so closely connected to our feelings about who we are.
So what would you say to, you know, listeners to this podcast who sometimes get in touch with me and say, I want to learn the British accent? You know, they're very keen to speak like me or speak like you, for example. Now, first of all, is it possible to completely kind of wipe out traces of your first language from your English accent? Is it possible? And secondly, is it necessary? What do you think?
The first question, is it possible to speak?
Let's say you're Spanish or you speak Spanish as a first language and you want to learn English and you want to be able to speak it without any trace of a Spanish accent. Do you think that's possible?
It's virtually impossible.
Uh-huh.
Now, there are always examples of people who do learn to do that, but they are very much the exception. And, you know, in the US and Canada, there are several very long-term studies, 20, 30-year studies of immigrants to the US and to Canada. And they've analyzed their language and the progress of their English over time. And what they've found is that on the whole, and these are always generalizations, but on the whole, all the migrants to the US and Canada have been able to learn, on the whole, to speak perfectly correct and grammatical English.
Mm-hmm.
With time, and if they choose to integrate and to learn, the one part of language which does not, that generally cannot be learned to a native level, is accent.
Interesting.
It's the one thing, and there seems to be a cutoff point around what people sometimes call the critical period. And the critical period is highly debatable.
Yeah.
And it's kind of bandied around as something that is kind of scientifically proven fact, but it's not at all. But it does seem to be relevant to pronunciation, which is to say that after around the age of 14,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you can probably, I'm sure, Luke, you know, you've come across people who you could relate to the situation. After the age of say 14, more or less, it's very difficult for someone to move abroad and develop a native-like accent. But now, if you think about people who have moved to the UK before the age of 14, I would guess that on the whole, every single one of them now speaks with a perfect English accent.
Right. So 14 seems to be the cutoff point.
I mean, obviously, it's flexible, but that's the kind of age. The studies show that that's the kind of age. So people that moved to the US or Canada before that age would end up not only learning perfect English, but also having a perfect English accent.
Right.
Those who moved after the age of 14 would end up speaking perfect English over time, but they would still retain their accent. Very much someone like a kind of Henry Kissinger type. Uh-huh. Type personality, someone who is, you know, is incredibly educated and speaks perfect English in every single way, and yet he has a very strong accent.
Right.
Still.
So, what does this mean then for, you know, adults, people who are, you know, way beyond 14, people who are determined to improve their accent? Is that something that they should be spending all their time and effort on?
No, I mean, for me, accent is one of the least important things about language learning, because here's the thing. If you spend time with native speakers, you will develop an effective accent. The problem comes when you're kind of studying in isolation and you never speak with people. But that's, you know, what is a good act? Let's try and simplify this. If you come to the UK, specifically London, and you live here, you will speak to people all day long who have an accent like mine, who have an American accent, a Scottish accent, a Welsh accent, a Northern English accent, a South African accent, an Australian accent, and that's just native English speakers.
Yeah.
Then you're going to speak to people with a Polish accent, a Spanish accent, an Indian accent, a Mongolian accent, a Chinese accent.
Mm.
And you're going to what you realize very quickly is that accent is meaningless. It doesn't mean anything, because all it does is demonstrate give you some clue as to where you're from.
Yeah.
Now, what matters, what's really important, is can you communicate effectively? And for that you need to have two things. You need to know how the language works, so you need to be able to speak English correctly, or you know, reasonably well. And then your accent needs to be able to communicate your emotions and your feelings.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can speak, you can say something, any sentence, and with the wrong intonation, the wrong accent, for example, that it will confuse people. Yeah. You know, you can say, I love you. But if you say it with the wrong accent or the wrong intonation or whatever, like
I love you.
Yeah, or I love you. Like, so what? What are you talking about? Yeah. You know, like, so the accent, you need to learn to make sure that your accent communicates your intention, the thing that you want to say.
Mm-hmm.
But and that's the only thing that matters, because beyond that, all it does is it shows where you're from. And, you know, when I'm speaking to someone, I don't care if they're from China or from South Africa or London or Alabama. It really doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
In fact, I like it. It's an endearing thing because it shows me that they are an individual, that I'm more interested in people that are different from me than people who are exactly like me.
Yeah. And in fact, native speakers, in fact, anyone find different accents to be charming and interesting, and you know, within your accent you have your personality and your own personal life story.
So the key thing, sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to finish that thought. The key thing is that accent, in that sense, so the accent is in it, the important thing about accent is that it shows your intention. It shows your emotion and your intention. That's not something you can learn by yourself. Okay, so if you're at home, you guys listening to this, if you're at home and you're trying to work on your accent at home by kind of, I don't know, shadowing or copying CDs or something, you know, that might help. But because accent is all about communication, the only way you're going to develop an effective accent is by being around people. And you know, when I think about my strongest languages, which would probably be Spanish and Portuguese would be my two strongest foreign languages.
Mm.
I often get complimented on my accent in those languages, and the reason is because I've spent years with people, with Brazilians, with Spanish, and so I know that when I open my mouth, I communicate very, very clearly because I'm so used to it. It's so normal for me to do that. And so, you know, to develop that good accent, you've got to spend time with people. And if you're learning on your own, that's going to be something which is going to be a problem at some point unless you start spending time with people.
Because development of an accent, or at least sort of developing to the point where you're speaking clearly, is a natural process, actually. You know, they call it accommodation. That's where when you spend time with other people, you naturally adapt the way that you speak to sort of match the way that they speak.
For example, just a second ago, you know, when I interrupted you, and I said something like, sorry to interrupt, but just to continue that thought, I think that's what I said.
Yeah.
Like that, the only way I can learn to say that and do it in a polite way. I hope I was polite. Sorry if I was rude. But the only way I can learn to do that is by interrupting enough people to be able to interrupt in a cool way.
Yeah. So it's just through a process of like trial and error, essentially, over long periods of time of actually talking to people, that you learn what works and what doesn't work in a language. And that includes also just about, you know, being clear, isn't it? I mean, it's a sort of an evolution.
And the key thing is, I mean, to try and make it practical for people, the key thing is that when you are with English speakers, try to watch the way that they use their voice and the way that they say things. So when you meet someone for the first time, you know, how does their voice, does their voice go up or down?
Yeah.
You know, when do they say, hey, Luke? Or do they say, hey, Luke? Mm. Or do they say, oh, hello, Luke. Like, how do they use their voice? What does it sound like? What do they do with their arms and their eyes and their body? Like, those are the things that you need to do. And so the one of the best kind of practical things to say to people is, like, don't just listen to the words, listen to the acting, if you like, and listen to the way people speak and how they use their voice and their body. And that's, and then imitate, copy exactly what they do. I remember, you know, a Brazilian Portuguese is a very beautiful language, but it's very, very expressive. And the other day I was doing I recorded a chat in Portuguese with a Brazilian friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I put it on the blog actually. So if anyone wants to go and watch, see a bit of me speaking Portuguese, you can go to iwillteachyoualanguage.com, search for Portuguese and you'll find it.
Yeah.
And I hadn't spoken it for some time actually. And so I was doing a kind of, before I was speaking, before I had this chat with the guy, I was just talking to myself in Portuguese for like 5 minutes or so. And I kind of noticed, I remembered actually, man, I have to open my mouth a lot more than I do normally.
Yeah.
Because in English, the mouth stays kind of fairly shut, but in Portuguese, quando se fala português, assim, a boca está muito mais aberta, sabe? Like you've got to open your mouth and like you've got to use a huge range of expression that you don't use in English. And I remember when I first started learning to speak Portuguese, I used to spend hours just copying the sounds and the different vowel sounds, aberta, that kind of thing, like copying, because it's so different from English.
Yeah.
And so that was really important to me, I think, over time to develop a good accent, because it was just about copying and imitating the way that people would speak.
And also understanding that it's a physical process. It's not just, you know, language is not just some sort of abstract thing just in words, you know, written down or in the air. It's actually a physical thing. It's about our bodies, and it's about the way that we use muscles to produce these sounds. So it's worth remembering that language is something that we do. It's not something we know, you know, it's something we actually do physically. So what you said about Portuguese for me is interesting, because it just showed that you're actually sort of working on the motor skills, the actual mechanics of moving your mouth and so on. I have an example about what you said about, for example, noticing the way that people say things, not just the words they use. And one thing I often noticed when I was teaching in London is that I would often take my students to the pub, and none of them could get served. They couldn't get served at the bar, and they didn't know how to say excuse me. Because, you know, in the UK, you say excuse me like this, excuse me, you know, excuse me like that. And you put your finger up.
Is that how you order a pint, Luke?
Yeah, excuse me, can I have a pint of Guinness, please? Excuse me, and eye contact, and sort of raise my eyebrows a bit and sort of nod my head and make eye contact. And if necessary, excuse me, rather than, you know, anything else or the other versions that could be, you know, like, excuse me, with a different intonation pattern. But that intonation pattern is, as far as I can tell, is the successful one. That's the one that gets the person's attention, and yet it doesn't sound too rude, you know, especially when you make a bit of eye contact, nod your head, raise your eyebrows a little bit, excuse me, you know, and that's a friendly way of saying excuse me, and that's the one that's going to get you the attention of the barman. And then you have to say, pint of Guinness, please. You know.
Yeah, and then you can say whatever you want to say, right? But you've got to get the attention in the first place.
Excuse me, mate. Excuse me. Yeah. Like that. Instead of, you know, excuse me. Or any of the other varieties.
Yeah, and so you think about the way the recording's in a textbook. And if you listen to the dialogues in a textbook, you're going to get, excuse me. Like you try ordering a pint by saying excuse me like that, you'll be there all day.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's why I think, like, so earlier the word I used... Well, the word I always use for talking about accents is effective, not accurate, not real, not English, but effective. Like, does it do the job that you want? And that, I love that example, because if you speak perfect English, but you go to a pub and you can't get a drink, then your English is not effective because you don't know how to use it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Going back to the thing about accents, I was just wanted to sort of wrap it up just by saying that so that the... What I guess we could say to my listeners who are worried about their accent is that actually people should realise that their version of English is still valid, that there are many different versions of English. There isn't necessarily one universal, perfect, correct version. There are many that is so diverse. And, you know, as long as you're being clear you should, I think, consider your version of English to be a perfectly valid version. Like there's a French English and a Japanese English and, you know, like you said, a Portuguese English or something. And as long as those versions are basically clear and effective, then it's all right to have traces of your accent in there.
Yeah, but let's make a distinction between accent and pronunciation as well.
Right,
because, because when we talk, when you talk about, for example, say Japanese English, what comes to mind is not so much the accent, but it's pronunciation problems. For example, the l and the r in English is something that is difficult in Japanese because they only have the l sound. They don't have the r like we do in English, right?
Go on.
Yeah, so when we're talking about accent, accent is one thing. Pronunciation is something else. So the most important thing, what is extremely important because it affects communication, and what is very, very important and something that you should learn right from the beginning is correct pronunciation. And that means making sure you can pronounce all of the English, all of the letters in the English alphabet accurately. Which means and that's not accent, that's pronunciation. So, and that's absolutely essential to communication, because if you're, and every language has this, you know, you have the Germans like to use w, for example, because that's which is something I found out recently. I spent a few weeks learning German and I kind of noticed these little differences. So almost every language is going to have difficulty with some pronunciation. Spanish people, for example, can't say r the way we say it. And so they're going to keep sounding very, very Spanish, or even maybe not successfully communicate until they can pronounce that in the correct way. And very few people actually can, really. So make sure your pronunciation is correct at the beginning.
So if it's a question of learning pronunciation, which version of pronunciation should they learn, though? Because, you know, there are sort of, like the standard phonemic chart is based on received pronunciation, isn't it?
Most
of the dictionaries, I mean, when they transcribe the you know, phonemes, if they transcribe words phonetically, it's basically received pronunciation. But you might go to, let's say, I don't know, Newcastle, Sunderland. You know, if you're working for Nissan in Sunderland, for example, you might actually find that people speak quite a different version compared to the version in the dictionary. But it's still sort of native British English.
Yeah, so what I say with this is, like, you know, always learn the standard version. Unless you have any other particular reason, then learn the standard version, because everybody's going to understand that, you know. So using the standard English phonemic chart is a great place to start, because the thing is, as soon as you start to live with English, you know, whether you move to America or you move to Newcastle or you marry an English guy or whatever, until you actually, the moment that English becomes a real part of your life, you know, your accent's going to change completely anyway. So until that happens, you may as well learn standard English, by using the resources that you've got. Because, I mean, you're right that the standard English pronunciation that you get in books and things is based on my English and your English, right? So it's like standard C pronunciation. And that is, because that's everywhere, because that's what you're going to find in all the books. If you decide to learn a different kind, you're making your life very difficult, because suddenly you don't have any resources now. You're going to get confused between all the different things. So definitely use what resources are available, because it's going to make your life so much easier. And, you know, this is something I've been finding recently, because I've been learning. Sometimes we never appreciate how much, you know, what we've got until we don't have it, right?
Yeah.
Because in English, we've got, you guys learning English, you're so lucky. You have so many books and courses and podcasts and things like that. If you try to learn a less common language like Cantonese or Egyptian Arabic, which I've learned for the last couple of years, you find suddenly there are no resources. There's like two books in the world for learning these languages.
Yeah.
And there's no standard way to write them. You can't get dictionaries that are any good. You know, without resources, you're really screwed. So the great thing about learning English is you've got more resources than you'll ever need. So, you know, don't worry about, is this the right English or the wrong English? You know, just go ahead, learn it, and it's not going to matter long term.
Just listen to Luke's English podcast, basically.
Just listen to Luke's English podcast.
I've got another question for you, which is sort of related to this, and we were talking about the physical side of you know, practicing English. Now, the question is, do you ever experience physical pain when you're speaking other languages? And the reason I ask this question is because I had a listener from South Korea who recently sent me a message. Now, I've already replied to him directly by email, but I thought it might be interesting to just sort of like have a little chat about this. So this is the message that I got from a listener in South Korea. And he said, I think it's he, could be a she, I'm not sure. Anyway, the message is, "Hi, Luke, I'm trying to repeat after you and read transcripts out loud so I can improve my English. But every time I do that for just 30 minutes, I have a sore and eventually my gland in my neck ends up getting swollen.
Wow.
I wonder, am I speaking English in a wrong way? If you hear about that situation, please let me know. Thank you." So this person says that they have a sore, maybe a sore throat. I guess that's what that means, rather than
hopefully.
Yeah, they end up with a sore throat, and they're it said, "My gland in my neck ends up getting swollen." Now, I guess, I don't know which gland that is. We have more than one gland, but I suppose it's like, you know, essentially this person's getting a sore throat when they repeat after me for 30 minutes. What do you think about that? Any thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. So my question would be, well, in Korean, how often do you speak for 30 minutes nonstop? And my guess is very rarely. How many of us ever, unless we're teachers, how often do you speak for 30 minutes?
Yeah.
And probably hardly ever, which means I would guess if you did that in Korean for 30 minutes, forget the English for a minute, if you spoke nonstop for 30 minutes in Korean, you'd have a sore throat too. So I think it's nothing to be worried about. It's just it's just the fact that you're using your voice more than otherwise. And, you know, just a couple of days ago, I was listening to a podcast where a guy was talking about making online courses. And he would have to spend like one whole day filming. So he would be on camera and he'd be speaking for the whole day to record these courses. Now, he said that after he did that, he had a sore throat for like a week.
Right.
And the reason was because he's like, in his normal life, he doesn't speak very much. He says like maybe 10 words a day or something like that. And so just the physical act of speaking that much is gave him a sore throat. Yeah. So I think it's totally normal. It may be the case that for this particular person, like speaking English maybe makes them, they have to open their mouth or use their mouth in different ways than they would in Korean. That might have something to do with it.
Yeah.
But no, it's just a stamina thing, really. So I think keep doing it.
I would say that, yeah, it's just a natural part of, you know, developing, you know, the physical attributes you need in order to pronounce, you know, things in English in the way that they're supposed to be pronounced. It's just a natural process that, you know, it's a bit like going to the gym. You know, if you're training in the gym, it is often quite painful, but that's just because your muscles are actually working, and you know, it's all part of the training process. About the sore throat, I guess that's part of it. For me, when I speak French for any length of time, I definitely feel the muscles around my jaw. I can feel there's some strain there. So I think it's more of a usually it's a muscular thing rather than a sore throat. But yeah, exactly. Speaking and repeating after me for 30 minutes on your own.
That's a lot.
In a new language. Yeah, of course it's going to hurt your throat, you know. So I would say to this listener that just, you know, don't worry. Maybe just reduce the amount of time that you're doing it, because you don't want to, you know, hurt yourself. So, you know, try speaking for 20 minutes at a time instead of 30, and just, you know, make sure you drink lots of water and, you know, take vitamin C. Don't catch a cold or something. Yeah. So I suppose it's just normal, isn't it? That's a normal thing that happens. Do you ever experience any sort of like, you know, muscle pain from,
I did have when I was learning Arabic, I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you use these guttural sounds like the ayn, which you don't have in other languages. And that's like uses your throat muscles in a way you never use otherwise.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you ever listen to Arabic people speaking, you know, it sounds very harsh to the ear from an English ear, because they use all these sounds that we simply don't use. And I found that often I would, because I used to have like hour-long Arabic lessons, and my throat would, I don't know if hurt is the right word, but I would certainly notice some fatigue in my throat and in my jaw after speaking Arabic for an hour, definitely.
How's your Arabic at the moment?
So I've basically decided to let my Arabic go.
Really? Long term?
I think so. Wow. And this was it's not something I've really talked about publicly, actually, but I'm very happy to share it because I think it's one of the things that you have to think about when you learn a lot of languages. Is that, you know, are you learning a language for sport or for your life?
Yeah.
And, you know, I learned Arabic in the first place because I moved to Egypt. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to learn the local language, and I was living there for a year, and so obviously I wanted to learn the language when I was there. Now I got to a kind of conversational level in Egyptian Arabic when I was there, and since then I've moved back to London, and Arabic plays no part in my life whatsoever here. I very rarely hear it spoken. I have no contact with it at all. So I'm kind of faced with this dilemma of do I now spend hours a week or however much time, my precious time every week, do I spend that time on Arabic? And I am sort of forced to look at the long term and think, well, when, let's say I do this, when will I use it? From time to time in a cafe, in an Arabic cafe maybe, or if I happen to meet someone, like there might be the occasional opportunity. But the brutal reality is that Arabic simply doesn't play a part in my life anymore. And I don't think I'm going to move back to the Middle East. So I don't see it playing a part in my life in the future. So I kind of taken the decision not to keep it up because... you know, an hour a week spent on Arabic is an hour that I'm not spending on something else. And so I would prefer to spend that time on languages that I'm more likely to use and that I'm more very, very personal decision.
And it's
difficult as well. In the past, I probably would have said, out of pride, I would have said, no way, I'm not losing this language, and then kept studying it and still never getting anywhere with it probably because unless you're really, with any language, especially a hard language like Arabic, if you're not putting hours and hours in every week, you're not going to improve.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a difficult decision, but I kind of feel like I'm at a stage with both in my life and with, because I've learned 9 languages now and, that is a...
It's more than enough, let's be honest.
But that's the thing. But even that kind of word enough is that I don't think of it in those terms. When I think about these languages, I think, well, what do they mean for my life?
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that I think about because it takes a lot of work to maintain them. And here's the kind of dilemma in my mind. So I find that once I get a language to a kind of B2 level, just a kind of upper intermediate level, I don't have to work at it anymore. I can keep that language probably forever as long as I speak it from time to time.
Yeah.
So, my French, for example, is very about as rusty as it can get.
Yes.
But because it used to be around a C1 advanced level, that's hardwired into my brain now, and I'm never gonna forget that. It doesn't require. It doesn't require any work to maintain.
You'll be able to get back to that position without too much work.
Exactly. If I ever needed to use French seriously, I know that within a few weeks of revision, I could get it back fairly quickly. It's in my brain.
Yeah.
Now, with my Arabic, it was never really beyond a kind of A2, kind of lower intermediate level, really.
Right.
And so I know that if I stop studying, I will lose it over time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. So it didn't get to that sort of that particular point at which it can stay alive.
Exactly. And so the question is, like, do I either let it go, or if not, do I continue studying it seriously until a kind of upper intermediate level? And that's the dilemma. And in the case of Arabic, because it's a hard language, that would mean, I think, 2-3 years of continued study. And yeah. I'm just not – it just doesn't make sense for me in my life to do that. Yeah. So it's a difficult decision, but
I'm sure my Arabic listeners are going to be gutted, Ollie. They'll be like, don't let Arabic go. It's a very personal decision. Which of the languages that you speak do you think is the most important for you at this point?
What a question.
Difficult question.
English?
Except English. is there one that you find that is more useful sort of in an immediate sense at this stage?
It was probably Spanish because I'm working quite a bit in Spanish at the moment. Yeah. So one of the projects I'm working at the moment is something called the Fluent Spanish Academy. Mm. And I've decided to start to help people to learn Spanish. And because with me and on my website in general, I always look at, I generally talk about language, how to learn a language, right? Language learning strategies. Yeah. But I want to start helping people with specific languages as well. And Spanish is the first one that I'm going to be looking at. And so I decided to create this program called the Fluent Spanish Academy, where people can join. Mm-hmm. And I teach them, they get to work with me every month. And so because I'm producing a lot of new content in Spanish. So I'm doing my Spanish lessons. I've done a Spanish pronunciation course. I'm making more short stories in Spanish to help people learn grammar.
Yeah.
All these things. So I guess that's the language I'm using professionally the most.
Right. Okay. I guess there's just like a high demand for Spanish in the world. Cause you know, it's one of the most spoken languages in the world, isn't it? So
it is. Yeah.
There's a lot of demand for it. Okay. All right. I've got endless questions, Ollie. There's loads of things we could talk about. But I think for this one, I think we've probably run out of time at this point.
Okay.
Cause you know, my podcast, it can go on and on and on forever. And, you know, at some point I need to just put a full stop at the end of an episode sometimes, but, please do come back at some point.
I'd love to.
Great. Great. Well then, you know, I'll have to have you back on the podcast again at some point, and we can kind of go through some of the other questions that I've got here and things like that. So what's next? What are you doing? Have you got any plans coming up? Any big things happening in the near future?
Well, the big thing, like I say, is the Fluent Spanish Academy. That's we're going to start that here, I think, probably next week. I've got one of the things I also do is I produce a lot of short books of short stories in different languages to help people. I'm really excited to be launching a book of English short stories as well.
Yeah.
Which it should have been up already, but it's not. It's probably going to be next week. That's available, and that's something that I'm really excited about because I have a lot of people, a lot of English learners who follow me on the blog and the podcast, and so I'm really happy to be making something for them as well.
Because
a lot of the stuff I do is in different languages, so this book of English short stories is definitely going to be it's something I'm really proud of. It, the stories are really, they're really interesting, they're unusual.
Yeah.
And so hopefully for those of you guys who are kind of upper intermediate level, these stories will be fun. And so, yeah, that's what's coming out in the near future.
Where can people find those stories? I mean, are they up now? Or are they coming soon?
Yeah, so by the time you guys listen to this, they will be published. You can go to two things you can do. You can go to maybe you can put a link on your blog, but you could also go to Amazon. If you just search for Ollie Richards, then you'll find all of my stuff there. You can also go to iwillteachyoualanguage.com/English stories, and that will send you straight to Amazon as well, so you can buy them there. There's a Kindle version, and also you can get the physical book as well, because I know lots of people like to have the book, the physical book, so that's available as well.
Okay, great. Well, have a really good day. I hope the sun is shining.
It is. The sun's it's been a crazy week here because we've got all these thunderstorms going on, and the pattern at the moment like a few hours of crazy thunderstorms,
yeah,
followed by bright sunshine.
Yeah.
So it's a bit nuts, but right now it's sunny, so I'm going to go out.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Good. Me too. You've got to enjoy the sunshine when it happens,
especially in London.
Absolutely. All right. Well, great to talk to you. Speak to you again soon. Have a really great day.
Yeah. Thanks, man. It's great fun as ever, and I look forward to the next time.
All right. Me too. Okay, mate. Cheers.
All the best. Bye bye.
Bye for now.
English.
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 Yes.
English.
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 English, dude.
English.
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 English. English.
English.
English.
Plain English, creep.
Speak English.
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 I'm speaking in English.
So there you go. That was my conversation with Ollie Richards, the second conversation with Ollie that I've had on this podcast. And he always has so many things to say, so many different things to talk about. And I hope to have him back on the podcast soon for another conversation like that. Let's see. What are the things that we talked about mainly there? Just to kind of recap. Essentially, we started off by talking about Periscope, didn't we? And we talked about using Periscope and the possibilities for learning English through Periscope. You can visit the page for this episode and you'll find a link to Periscope where you can download the app. We then talked about the relationship between accents and our identity, and whether or not learners of English should spend loads and loads of time and effort on reducing their accent in English. And there's a question of, you know, there's a difference to be made between accent reduction and just learning clear pronunciation. And so Ollie suggested that learners of English just focus on learning clear pronunciation, basically learning how to say words and sentences in a clear and effective way. So focusing there on the main aim should be effective communication rather than adopting a certain accent. It's just about results. Are you able to communicate exactly what you mean effectively or not? And that really is about learning how to speak clearly. So he suggests that you use, you just use, let's say, pronunciation guides. You could use pronunciation self-study books that help you to develop clear pronunciation using the phonemic chart. And also just the benefits of interacting in English, like communicating with people, probably native speakers, as a sort of a natural way of focusing on effective communication. We also talked about the physical side of learning a language and the way that sometimes your face or throat may hurt if you speak another language for a long period of time. And just the question of whether it's normal to experience any physical pain when practicing your speaking in English. And it is, frankly, quite normal, especially if you speak for an extended period of time on your own. For example, if you're repeating after me or if you're reading from a transcript or something like that, then yeah, naturally it's going to hurt a little bit. So we talked about that a bit and plenty of other things. So one of the things that Ollie stressed there was the importance of engaging in spoken communication as a way of focusing on developing your effectiveness in communication in English. So you should be thinking about ways that you can do that. Then, you know, don't underestimate the importance of just engaging in actual communication with people. How can you do that? Well, if you have opportunities to speak to people and communicate in English, then you must take them. And that can also include just, speaking English to people that speak your language. So you might want to try and arrange like English speaking groups or find people on the internet who are willing to talk to you in English. I think that it's still going. I think there is a Skype group for Luke's English podcast. You might want to just check out the forum. Go to the website, teacherluke.co.uk, click on forum in the menu. And I think that there are Lepsters there who've shared their Skype details and who get together sometimes to talk to each other on Skype. Good idea. You know, it's important to actually activate your spoken English. If there are people who live near you in some way, or if you have people at work who speak English, then, you know, try and make the effort to get together with them and make the most of those opportunities and actually, you know, speak English, because it's very important those times. OK, so really, you've got to try and take advantage of any opportunities you have to actually interact with people in English, because that's really probably the best way, the most direct way to improve the effectiveness of your communication in English. If you don't have any options, or if it's just not convenient for you to find people to speak to, then obviously there's iTalki as well, the sponsor for this podcast. And I do talk about iTalki in every episode, you know, a little brief mention at the beginning. It is good. I mean, it's genuinely a good idea. And lots of people use it. Ollie Richards uses iTalki to practice his languages because it's so convenient. So, you know, you could consider using iTalki. That's a pretty good solution, really. If you can't find people to speak English to, that you can just find them on the internet and speak to them using Skype. Just go to teacherluke.co.uk/talk or click an iTalki logo on the website. You can check it out. And if you like, you can buy some time with some native speakers or teachers. And if you do that, if you follow my code and then you do that and you buy some lessons or speaking time, then you'll get that discount. You'll get a $10 voucher from iTalki, which you can then apply to other purchases in the future. In the future, where, imagine the future where you will be speaking even more effective English after doing all these things. Yeah, it's possible. You can. You really can do it as well. Also, did you notice that Ollie didn't ask me about my French homework? He didn't ask me. I got away with it. Yay, I got away with it. Although ultimately, you know, I'm the one who pays the price because I'm not doing the practice. So, you know what I need to do? I need to have my lunch and do some homework. All right? Okay. And what about you? What about your commitment to English? Have you been doing your homework? I don't know. That's up to you, isn't it? All right then. That's the end of this episode. You'll find links to Ollie's work on the page for this episode. You'll also find a link to his book of short stories in English. So check those things out. That's it for this one. Speak to you again soon. But for now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is Luke's English Podcast.
Can't touch this.
This is a masterpiece of the English language.
All righty then.
Just think of the accolades it's received over the years.
Wait a minute. Who are you?
I'm Luke Skywalker. I'm here to rescue you.
Ooh, this is going to be good.
Really?
Yes.
I want to get into it, man.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is Luke's English Podcast.
And this is Britain at its best.
People. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.